Starwalker Studios presents GM Intrusions, the podcast devoted to Numenera and the strange. This episode is brought to you by the patrons of GM Intrusions. You too can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/GM Intrusions.
Welcome to episode 65 of GM Intrusions, your podcast devoted to Numenera, the Strange, and all Cypher System games. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. I have some Cypher System announcements for you today, including the announcement of the imminent Cypher System rulebook and the Strange Bestiary. I also have a review of the Strange Player's Guide, and in ANP, I'll talk about a brand new strange creature, the Spine Tingler. Finally, in Strange Encounters, Agent Neil discusses an optional rule for the Cypher system. So grab your dice and get ready to spend some effort. It's time for a GM intrusion. Hello, listener. Welcome back. This is the premiere episode of season two of GM Intrusions. I hope that the actual play episodes have been keeping you busy while I've been gone on my quote unquote break. It's really great to be back. It's really great to be making this episode today. It probably seems to you like there was no break because I've been putting out the actual play episodes. But those, you know, those are game sessions that I recorded long, long time ago. For me, it's been a long time since I've gotten behind the mic for GM Intrusions, and it's really great to be back. So I thought I would start out and tell you a little bit of what you can expect from season two of the show. First of all, I am going to try really hard to have more content focused on the strange. I've had some requests and comments from people saying that they would like me to talk more about the strange. And for understandable reasons, the show has been was very focused on Numenera in season one. But the strange is out. The bestiary is coming soon. So there's going to be more and more to talk about the strange. So I am going to try to do that. If there is something specific you would like me to talk about, please let me know. You can email me at lexstarwalker@gmail.com or find me on Google+ and let me know. Also, I am going to endeavor to have even more content focused on the Cypher system overall. To me, it seems like everything I've done almost entirely has been focused on the Cypher system overall. But I do, you know, often use Numenera for my examples. And so I think that to some people, it's not obvious that this, what I'm talking about, can be applied to any Cypher system game like The Strange or future Cypher system games. So I'm going to try to make that more obvious and kind of hang a lantern on the fact that almost anything I talk about, no matter which game I'm using as an example, is something that you can apply to any Cypher system game. And as I'm going to cover a little bit later in the episode, that's going to be more and more important and relevant as time goes on. And also this season, I am going to have more and more actual play sessions on my YouTube channel, which I'll have linked in the show note. And I will also continue doing the Obsidian Monolith and the Obsidian Monolith actual play episodes. So those are some additional things you can look forward to in season two, in addition to all the things you're used to getting in season one. Just a quick announcement, November's patron hangout is going to be on Sunday, November 23rd at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And those are from now on going to be done via Google Hangouts on Air. So it will be possible, even if you're not a patron, to observe the conversation and listen to and watch it. So the way that you'll be able to do that is go to the GM Intrusions Google Plus community page on Sunday, November 23rd at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And I will post a link there to the Hangout, and you will be able to watch and listen to the Hangout. The Hangout will also later be available on my YouTube channel. So if you're not able to tune in live, you can still watch it later. However, if you are able to tune in live, you should be able to ask questions if you want to ask some questions, and if we have time, we'll answer some questions. But yeah, I thought it would be fun to make this a more interactive thing for all my listeners and not just the patrons. And if there's ever a day when not many patrons are able to come and I feel like we need more people to have a good discussion, I may occasionally pull in people from the audience. So that's always a possibility too. Also, I have started recording and releasing the patron campaign on my YouTube channel. The first session is up now, which was actually the third session we played. But it's not a big deal that you missed the first two sessions. I've been trying to make it episodic so you can just jump in on the third session. And it's the beginning of a new story arc, so it won't seem like you're in the middle of things and don't know what's going on. Now, again, like my Obsidian Monolith actual play videos on YouTube, these are completely raw recordings of the game session unedited. I don't know. Maybe one day I will do a podcast of those. But probably not, because the Obsidian Monolith actual play episodes are a lot of work. They take hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to edit. And I'm sure by the time I'm done getting all those out, that this will really be old hat and I'll be wanting to podcast some new thing I'm doing. But as long as there's interest in actual play episodes, you can pretty much count on I will always be putting out some kind of edited actual play podcast content. So there's that to look forward to. I will have the link to both the playlist for the Patreon campaign and the playlist for the Obsidian Monolith campaign on my YouTube channel in the show notes. And again, the Obsidian Monolith one, right now only the first session is up, because for the second through seventh sessions, we didn't use Hangouts on Air, so I don't have video for those, but you can listen to the podcast for those. But once we get to session 8 on the podcast, I will be releasing the rest of those on the YouTube channel. So keep an eye on that. So I have some exciting announcements to throw your way in case you're not aware of these things. The Strange Bestiary is coming out very soon, and you can actually download a preview PDF of it, which includes a few of the critters. And I will have a link to that in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/GM intrusions. Also, did you know that you can now subscribe to the Monty Cook Games news by email? They're doing a what they call Cypher Chronicles every week now, where they tell us what they're up to and what they're doing that week and give us updates on Numenera and the Strange and what's coming. And it's really great stuff. So I'm going to have the link to the article on the Cypher System rulebook in the show notes for this episode. So you can click on that. And then on that page, if you look in the right margin, there's a spot where you can subscribe, and then you will get an email every time they post a new news article. So it's a great way to kind of stay up to date on what's going on. So the first third-party Cypher System game has been announced, and it's going to be called Shotguns and Sorcery, and it's going to be kickstarted soon. I've got a link to the preview to the Kickstarter in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/GM intrusions. And also, one last thing here in this opening segment that I wanted to mention real quick. I think once or twice on the show in the past, when I was talking about Sir Arthur's Guide, I had talked about how the glimmers for the Artifacts and Oddities Collection 1 and the Cypher Collection 1 were basically redundant if you get Sir Arthur's Guide, because they reprinted those Numenera items into Sir Arthur's Guide, which I've kind of gone back and forth on that. But my final opinion on that is I think that that's a good thing. I am glad that I can just grab Sir Arthur's Guide and the core book and I'm good to go. And I don't have to carry around these glimmers or keep track of these glimmers. And it makes sense, you know, when they put out a hard copy supplement to gather up any relevant glimmer supplement into that, because I think it makes sense and it's less things for you to keep track of. And then new players coming in, they can just buy Sir Arthur's Guide. They don't need to get all these glimmers. So I think that's awesome. And I think that's really cool and the best way to do it. But I think I had mentioned on the show before that, oh, well, I really hope that they say something in the description of those glimmers on their site to let people know that that's in Sir Arthur's Guide. So if you have a new player coming in, that they don't think, oh, I need to buy Sir Arthur's Guide and the Cipher Glimmer and the Artifact and Oddities Glimmer to have everything. And you know what? Just out of curiosity, I checked yesterday and they have done exactly that. So in both of those product descriptions for the glimmers, there is a bolded note that says, hey, this material has been reprinted in Sir Arthur's Guide. So if you have Sir Arthur's Guide, you don't need this. And I think that's really awesome. So kudos to you, Monty Cook Games, for doing that. And thank you very much on behalf of new players for doing that. That's really cool. And as far as me, who bought both the glimmers, I don't have any buyer's remorse because they're not that expensive. And they gave me access to those items months before Sir Arthur's Guide came out. And for someone who runs and plays Numenera as much as I do, having a few more Numenera items to use in my games early was definitely worth the few dollars that I paid for those glimmers. So yet another example of why Monty Cook Games is awesome.
Under the Lens, the Cipher System.
All right, for today's Under the Lens, Monty Cook Games has announced an upcoming Cipher System rulebook, and they are saying that this is coming out this summer sometime. I'm guessing right around Gen Con in August would be a fair guess, I think, or a safe guess. Is that the way you say it? Safe guess? Safe estimate? Anyway, I will have a link to their announcement in my show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/GMIntrusions. But I thought I would talk about this a little bit. So basically what this is it is the core system, the Cipher system, as well as a lot of example foci and different versions of the types and descriptors and type abilities and things like that that you can use to design your own game, to design your own setting. And they are going to have examples for many different genres so that you can use the Cipher system to run a sci-fi game or a steampunk game or a horror game or a fantasy game or whatever you want to do with it. So definitely go check that article out. It's really interesting. I think this is really exciting. And I think it's going to be awesome, especially for people like me. And I know a lot of people out there are kind of tinkerers and like to fiddle with things. And it will be really fun to take a stab at coming up with your own setting, take a stab at coming up with your own game, and to have the tools that you need to do that. However, all that said, I do have a few things that I wonder about with this that I'd love to know. And one of the biggest questions that came to my mind immediately when reading this is wondering if the core rule sections are going to be revised. The sections that are already in Numenera and the Strange, are we going to get a revised version of the Cipher system? I really, really hope so. There have been a few sections of the Numenera core book and now the Strange core book that have caused a lot of confusion, that cause a few questions to be asked over and over again every time new players come into the game. And, you know, I talked about in a previous episode how I was very disappointed to see those sections copy-pasted into the Strange. Seems like that would have been a perfect time to revise those and make them more clear and maybe give some more examples so that it's more obvious what the designers at Monty Cook Games are intending. So I was very disappointed when they were just copy-pasted into the Strange. And so I'm really hoping that won't be the case in this book and that those sections will be revised and edited for clarity. And before The Strange came out, I would have assumed that, right? I mean, most games I've played, every new printing of the rules is a revision. And in that way, if there's ever a question between, like, say the rules for character advancement were slightly different in Numenera and The Strange, and the question was, well, which is the quote-unquote correct way to do it? Well, it would be The Strange, because that's the later printing, so those rules have been revised, and that's the one you go with if you're really worried about getting it exactly right. And then, you know, obviously the Cypher System rulebook would be the newest, latest version of the rules and would kind of be the end-all, be-all, you know, kind of like Cypher System, you know, 1.2 or whatever, where we fixed all the typos, we fixed all the little, you know, inconsistencies. For example, the discrepancies about whether your optional character advancement has to replace a skill advancement or can replace either of your four advancements. In the Numenera core book, for example, it says one thing on page 24 and it says something different on page 112. And whichever way is the right way, it should be exactly the same. Every time that rule is talked about, it should be exactly the same. It should be worded exactly the same. Again, this is rules text. This isn't flavor text. And, you know, the most important thing with rules text is that the rules are clear and concise and consistent. And they aren't in some cases. So these are things that I would love to see fixed and that I would hope and assume would be fixed in this book, but I don't know. We haven't heard anything on this. And then another question I have is about what percentage of this book will be new material and what percentage will be material that we already have in Numenera and or The Strange core books. I'd really like to know that. And I totally understand that some duplication is necessary. You know, like when The Strange came out, we wanted the full rules in there, right? You don't want someone who wants to play The Strange and has no interest in Numenera have to go buy the Numenera core book in order to be able to play The Strange, right? But it is kind of a drag for those of us that have both to have, you know, a sizable chunk of the book is the same thing. And now we're going to have the Cypher System rule book. So we're going to have three copies of the same rules. And again, if each later copy is a revision, then it's not so bad because at least you're getting something. You're getting a better written version of the rules where things that have caused confusion in the past have been reworded to be more clear. And also, you know, it'd be really nice to have a free PDF of these changes and errata available, assuming these changes and errata are made. That'd be really nice to have. And again, a lot of other games have this available for their customers. And also, you know, I think this is actually an opportunity for Monte Cook Games. I think that if they came forward and said, you know, yes, this book will be a revised version of the Cypher System rulebook, and we're going to take those rules that have over and over again confused people in the online communities, and we're going to make it much more clear and give you examples. And also, you know, we found some things in our own playtesting that we wish we would have done a little differently, and we're going to fix those. I think that would be a strong selling point for this book. I think for someone like me who already has Numenera and already has The Strange, and I'm wondering whether or not to get this book, the rules being revised would be the tipping point for me. That could change my mind from, I'm not going to get it, to I'm definitely going to get this book. It makes it valuable to me, even if I don't have any plans of coming up with my own setting or my own game, because I can have a revised version of the rules. So I think that would be a great marketing bullet point for the book. On the back of the book, it could say revised Cypher System. Here's an example of something that for me is causing confusion, and I don't think it should cause confusion. In Numenera, whenever you tier up, you have the option to replace one of your type abilities with a different type ability of the same tier. So let's say you're a nano and at tier 1 you got the Onslaught esoteric and you tier up to tier two and you're like, you know, I never use Onslaught. I'd rather have Scan. You can replace Onslaught with Scan. Okay. Now in the Strange, you have the same kind of thing. However, the rules in the Strange say that you can replace that ability with an ability of any tier that you have access to. So if you're gaining tier four, you could replace one of your tier one type abilities with, say, a tier three type ability. Now I wonder, is that just one of the subtle ways that the Strange is just a little bit different from Numenera? Or is that something where the folks at Monte Cook Games, after, you know, playing with the system for another year, have said, you know what, actually, we don't need that restriction. It's perfectly fine to let it replace any, you know, ability of a tier you can get. It doesn't have to replace the same one. That's a restriction that isn't needed. And, you know, originally we thought it was for balance or whatever, but now after playing the games more, we realize it's not. And again, if each later printing was seen as a revision of the rules, that confusion wouldn't be there, because the assumption would be, well, yeah, that does replace the Numenera one. And if it didn't, they would say, you know, this is particular to the Strange. This doesn't replace the Numenera rule or whatever. But instances like this, like, I have no idea. I guess it's whatever I want it to be, because I have no idea what the quote unquote official answer on that would be. So for me personally, when it comes to the Cypher System rulebook, my level of excitement for it is very much going to depend on the answers to these questions. And I really hope we get answers to these questions before the book comes out. If not, I guess I will just have to wait till the book comes out and go to a bookstore with my Numenera book and sit down and see if it's word for word, section for section, identical or not. How much is reprinted, how much is new, and then decide if it's worth it or not. But I mean, at this point, I would probably say it's not, because I already have two copies of the rules. I really don't need a third identical copy. But again, a revised copy would be very different in my mind. Now, I know hindsight is 2020, and it's really easy to stand here in the present and look back at the past and say, oh, well, things should have been like this. And I get that. But, you know, if I can take just a minute to wish and dream, it would have been really nice to have this book, the Cypher System Rulebook, first, and then had Numenera and the Strange, and then those could have not had the core rules in them, and could have been, that space could have been devoted entirely to setting specific stuff. Now, I realize that this was probably not even possible with Numenera, because when Monte Cook launched the Kickstarter for Numenera, you know, he said that he did not expect it to be as successful as it was. Numenera was originally going to be a much smaller book. It was going to be black and white. It was not going to have nearly as much art as it had. And the Kickstarter went gangbuster, and that turned into a full color, much larger book that was the beginning of a whole product line. So it totally makes sense that when Monte Cook launched the Numenera Kickstarter, that he wasn't like, oh, I should just do a book of the system and then later kickstart the setting. First of all, how many people would buy just a system book without a setting to go with it, right? I mean, that wouldn't even make any sense. However, it does seem like that between the launch of Numenera and the launch of The Strange would have been the perfect time to put out the Cypher System rulebook. And then instead of reprinting the rules in The Strange from Numenera, they could have just devoted The Strange core book to The Strange and said, hey, you know, kind of like, I think the latest White Wolf game is like this. Like, if you want to play Vampire, you have to buy the New World of Darkness system core book, whatever it's called. I'm sorry, I don't play it. And then you have to buy the Vampire book, right? So you have to buy two books. Still not as bad as D&D, where you have to buy three books. So you have to buy two books, right? So they could have done something like that, where you need to buy the Cypher System core book, or if you already have Numenera, then you don't need to buy that book. And then you get the Strange book. And the benefits I see of that is that the Strange could have had, for instance, more foci in it, especially recursion-specific foci. For instance, there are only 8 foci specific to Earth and only 7 foci specific to Rook. So if you're running a group of 4 to 6, especially 6 players, and they go to Earth or they go to Rook, their choices for foci are really limited. On Earth, with a group of 6 players, you have enough foci for each player and then only 2 left over. And in Rook, you only have 1 left over. And considering that, you know, you're not supposed to have players at the table with the same foci, instead of it being a thing of, oh, I just came to Rook, I can play any focus I want, the players have to have this in-depth conversation about who gets what focus, because there's only one more than the number of players. Also, if we would have had a core Cypher system book first, then Numenera and the Strange could have been supplemental game or system books. And I think that we'd be more willing to buy Numenera as a supplement for the Strange for more foci type abilities and descriptors. Because unfortunately, it's just the nature of the beast with the Strange, with the sheer number of settings in that game, that no matter how many foci they gave us, it would never be enough, right? But if you had a Cypher system core book and then Numenera was all setting and Numenera specific foci and things like that, and the Strange was all setting and the Strange specific foci and stuff like that, I think a player or a GM would be more likely to buy Numenera as a supplement for the Strange just to get more foci to use and more type abilities and things like that. We could have also had more recursions provided in the Strange, and we could have had more information for the recursions that were provided other than Rook and Arden. I feel like the setting information given for Rook and Arden is very good, and there's a good amount of it, enough to get you going. But then the other recursions that they give, there's just not much, and there's not many of them. And it would have been really nice, in addition to having more, you know, recursion specific foci in the Strange, it would have been really nice to have more recursions and had them more fleshed out. We could have also had more on the Strange itself. That is one area of the game that I feel is a little lacking. I think that chapter could have been 2 or 3 times as long and we would still be confused about the Strange. And we could have had full adventures like in Numenera as opposed to adventure seeds. And we could have had more creatures. So to me, the Strange kind of feels light, if that's the right word, compared to Numenera. And I think mostly this is because it's being spread out over more than 3 settings, right? So that greatly dilutes your choices in foci, like I talked about, and also in creatures, because you have certain creatures that are only found in Arden or magic-based recursions. You have certain creatures that are only found in Rook or mad science recursions. You have certain creatures that are only found in the strange creatures that are only found on Earth or, you know, normal physics recursions. So in any given part of the setting, you know, your number of creatures you have to choose from isn't necessarily all the creatures in the book, right? It's a fraction of that. So having more creatures in the book would have really helped with that. But again, you know, when Monty Cook did the Numenera Kickstarter, they had no idea how successful it would be. In fact, I don't think Monty Cook Games was even a thing at the beginning of that Kickstarter. That was something that happened because of how successful it was. And so Cypher System Rulebook couldn't have realistically happened then, but I do think it could have, should have happened before The Strange. And I also think that if they could have taken or would have taken another year of development for The Strange, that it wouldn't have felt so light, partly because they could have devoted more pages to Strange specific stuff. They wouldn't have had to reprint the rules from Numenera or the Cypher System book. And also just because they would have had another year to work on it, and it would have given Numenera product line another year to really get going and allowed them to focus more on the Numenera products. And then when The Strange came out, it could have had more time and thought put into it, because I imagine that part of the reason that the rule sections in The Strange are just reprints from Numenera was just a thing of time. They only had so much time to put that book out. There are only a few people in Monty Cook Games, and they're putting out Numenera supplements at the same time. So, you know, it probably came down to a time crunch, and that was a way they could save some time. The revisions they would have needed to make probably weren't that many, and it probably came down to a cost-benefit analysis, right? Of, you know, how much time would it take us to revise these sections as opposed to how many issues there really are. And there really aren't that many. For the number of pages in the Numenera book, the number of issues that have come up due to just editing oversights or unclear wording or whatever are really pretty small, and smaller than any other game I've played, I'm pretty sure. However, all that said, in The Strange, and you know, I like numbers, I like specifics, because you can get feels for things that aren't really accurate. So I looked, before I did this episode, I looked into, you know, what specifically in The Strange is reprinted, how much of it is reprinted, is it really as much as it seems? And the specific chapters of The Strange core book that are reprinted from Numenera are chapters 1, chapters 8, chapter 19, and chapter 20. Chapter 20 does have an added section, like a couple paragraphs on translation, but other than that, it's the same. And then I'm not sure which chapter it is, but each book has an example of play, and those are different. But if you count up the actual pages that are the same, 72 pages of The Strange core book are just reprinted, copy-pasted from the Numenera core book. You know, we could have gotten quite a few new foci and creatures and information on recursions in 72 pages. That's 17% of the total page count of the book is reprinted material. So I don't know, opinions will vary whether that's a big number. To me, that's almost 20% of the book, right? That's a lot. That's a lot of stuff I bought twice. And I would have loved some more new foci for Rook and for Earth. So they weren't spread so thin. And I haven't run much of The Strange yet, so I don't know how thin the creatures are spread. If you get into situations on certain recursions where you're really limited on the creatures you have access to, I don't really know, but they could have had a few more creatures too with 72 pages. And I think all of this, giving The Strange another year of development and having, you know, more pages in the book devoted to The Strange specific stuff would have made it feel more fleshed out than it does. Unfortunately, I think this is just an issue of bad timing, and I totally believe Monte Cook Games when they say, and I quote, and this is from the announcement about the Cypher System rulebook, they say, "We first started thinking seriously about this idea back in the early days of working on The Strange. We knew the Cypher System was flexible, but we figured we'd have to do a fair amount of kit bashing to make it work properly with The Strange's setting, or settings as the case may be. As it turned out, we made virtually no changes to the core mechanics, and creatures and character abilities from one game pretty much work great in the other. We've played in-house campaigns in other settings using the Cypher System, and they've also required few modifications beyond adding new types, foci, descriptors, and other game-specific elements. The game system is really flexible." So I believe them, and I do not for a moment believe that this was some kind of like money grab on Monte Cook Games' part to put out The Strange first and then the Cypher System rulebook. I believe them that this idea came about through the development of The Strange and what they learned from that. All of this is just me in the future looking back on the past and saying, oh, if only it could have been like this. And if, you know, God forbid there's ever a second edition of the Cypher System, I bet money that that's the way they do it. But, oh God, I hope that doesn't happen, or at least not for a long, long time. And I do really appreciate that they have decided to go this route and put out the Cypher System rulebook as opposed to putting out more game lines and just, you know, every year putting out a new product line using the Cypher System. I really appreciate them taking this strategy instead. So let me know what you think about all this. Let me know what you think about the Cypher System rulebook and whether you're interested in getting it and how much you even care about if there's reprinted versus revised material. And let me know. I'd love to hear from you about it. LexStarwalker@gmail.com.
Starwalker Review.
All right. Might be a case of too little too late here, but I'm finally going to review The Strange Player's Guide. I'm going to keep this kind of quick and to the point because I did a pretty extensive review of the Numenera Player's Guide in episode 3 of this podcast, and I will have that linked in the show notes so you can go check that out if you want more. Pretty much everything I said about the Numenera Player's Guide applies to The Strange. But for those of you that just want a quick and dirty what I think of it without having to go back to that, here we go. First of all, full disclosure, I only have the PDF of this supplement. I do not have the hard copy, so the review is based on the PDF. However, I do have other paperback products from Monte Cook Games. I have the Character Options book for Numenera, and I have the Devil's Spine. So I am assuming and feel confident that as far as the production quality of the physical book, it is identical to those. So bearing that in mind, this book has very good binding, high quality, glossy paper. My Devil's Spine book is still as good as new. And I got that thing as soon as it came out. I've run it, I've used it, and I don't have any pages falling out. I don't have any issues with it. It's good as new. It's also full color. It's 93 pages long, plus the character sheets at the back. The price for this is $19.99 on the Monte Cook Games store, or $7.99 for the PDF. And it's $16.12 on Amazon. As far as what is in the book, basically it is a reprint of chapters 1 to 7 and chapter 9 of the Strange Core book. So chapter 1 is How to Play the Strange. Chapter 2 is Creating Your Character. Chapter 3 is the Type chapter. Chapter 4 is Descriptor. Chapter 5 is Focus. Chapter 6 is Equipment. And then chapter 7 is Translation, which is chapter 9 in the core book. It also includes some pre-generated characters and the character creation walkthrough and a character sheet. So the bottom line for this, it, as usual, depends who you are and what your situation is. If you're a GM and you already have the Strange Core book, you don't really need this. Again, it's just a reprint of chapters 1 to 7 and chapter 9. However, if you would like more copies of the rules at your gaming table and your players can't or won't buy them, this is a cheaper option for you than buying more core books. If you're a player and you don't plan on GMing the game, then this has pretty much everything you need. The biggest exception would be it doesn't contain the ciphers and artifacts or any of the setting material. But really, as a player, you don't need that. It is nice, you know, when I'm playing The Strange and I have my Strange Core book and the GM gives me a cipher, it's nice to be able to look it up myself to see what it does, but not a huge deal. And if you're a player, I would definitely recommend getting the player's guide. It's, you know, $40 cheaper, depending where you buy it. However, if you're a player and you think you will or may GM, then it's kind of your call. You may just save some money in the long run if you just buy the core book. If you think you're going to GM, then, you know, I'd probably just get the core book. However, if you're not sure if you're going to GM, you could start out just getting the player's guide and make sure you like the game and everything. And then if you do end up GMing and you do get the core book later, you'll have the player's guide for the players at your table. And unfortunately, I don't get to run much Numenera in person. But I think that if I ran Numenera a lot in person and I had a lot of players who didn't have the rules, or maybe no players that didn't have the rules, I would probably seriously consider getting the player's guide in print just so that I could pass that around instead of my core book. A, because I'm going to need my core book in case I need to look something up. And B, I love my core book and I don't want my players messed with it. Because after decades of role-playing, I've learned that most people are not as careful and loving with their role-playing books as I am. And I've seen a lot of my books take a beating by being passed around the table among different players. So again, you know, it's really up to you, up to your situation. But this is a very good book, very, very well made. I love that they have these player's guides for their games. I just love it because it's so great. If I'm running The Strange and I've got a new player who wants the rules, it's so nice to say, hey, you can go buy this book for $20 from your game store or $16 from Amazon. And that's a lot easier pill to swallow than say, well, you got to shell out $60 and you're going to have all this stuff that you don't really need as a player. So that's awesome. And it's also like lighter, you know, to carry around. The core book's pretty chunky.
Antagonists and protagonists.
All right. For today's antagonist and protagonist, I am going to talk about the Spine Tingler. And the Spine Tingler is a creature from the preview of the Strange Bestiary that you can get on Monte Cook Games website right now. So you can go over to the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com and get the link to that and go download it. And it's got quite a few critters in there to wet your whistle until the bestiary comes out. And I have been super busy. So full disclosure, again, I have not looked at this yet. I glanced over it just to decide, you know, which of these creatures I was going to cover, and I picked the one with the coolest picture, I thought. So I'm going to talk about the Spine Tingler, and we'll learn about this creature together. When astronauts returned to the lander, one of them brought back an uninvited guest. Okay, so we're talking about Apollo astronauts here. It doesn't say that, but lander must refer to the moon lander, right? That could have been a little more clear. But anyway, when the astronauts returned to the lander, one of them brought back an uninvited guest, a parasite that feeds on cerebrospinal fluids. See, I like this guy already. That was all I needed to know that I liked him. Later, when the thing spread through the crew, killing them one by one, it was clear that something horrible had happened. The original astronaut managed to escape, but now that Spine Tinglers have a taste for human juice, it's only a matter of time before they're seen again. So either we're rewriting history a little bit here, or this isn't Apollo missions, it's some future moon mission. Or maybe a Mars mission. I guess it's up to you. Spine Tinglers are native to Recursion, seeded by any number of sci-fi horror films, whose science fiction setting was merely a handy backdrop for the terror. And terrifying they are, given the Spine Tingler's ability to attach to a victim and remain unseen while the prey slowly weakens and dies. Okay, so this is all I see. Environment, mad science. Disregard my commentary. This is for Recursion, not for Earth. Okay, it makes more sense now. See, I told you I hadn't read this yet. So the motive is hungers for human cerebral spinal fluid reproduction. I wonder if those two are involved. Maybe we'll find out. Environment mad science, usually found in abandoned alien spacecraft or infesting human interplanetary spacecraft or settlements, often in pods of 3 to 6. We have a little quote here from Kenneth McCauley, a recursor, who says, "I had a funny dream last night. I don't remember much except someone was tickling my back." Yeah, you know, I lived in Kentucky for a while and they have the hugest millipedes you've ever seen. And I was sitting on a couch watching Angel one day. It was like 100+ degrees outside. And I felt something tickling my neck. I thought it was the girl sitting next to me just being a goofball. You know how they kind of with their fingernails like tickle you. And so I just kind of reached up and like brushed at my neck. And this huge freaking millipede flies onto the floor. Oh my God. The thing was like as big as my hand. I swear. It was kind of freaky. All right. So we're going to skip stats. Let's see. A Spine Tingler prefers to attach to a victim while the victim is unaware, slither up under the clothing, and connect to the victim's back along the spine. This reminds me kind of a creature in a certain Numenera adventure I've run. It connects by sinking teeth-like projections and siphoning through tendrils in the flesh while slathering the wounds with anesthetizing slime. So kind of like a tick. A conscious victim, unaware of the attack, is allowed to attempt intellect defense roll to become aware when the attachment first occurs. If a Spine Tingler makes the connection with the victim none the wiser, it begins to slowly suck the victim's cerebral spinal fluid. From the victim's perspective, feeding manifests like a disease. And then there's some mechanics involved with that. If the Spine Tingler is never found and dispatched, the victim dies after a few weeks of losing too much cerebral spinal fluid. After the parasite is attached for a day, a victim literally is unable to notice the creature feeding on him. It'll take someone else to see the lump under the victim's garments or see him unclothed to understand that he isn't dying of a disease, but of an invasive parasite. So this is another good reason to go to the doctor when you're sick, because a doctor would notice this. If discovered, a spine tingler detaches and attacks foes with slashing claws, but it prefers to scuttle to safety in a place too small to be followed. Interaction: a spine tingler acts with all the shrewdness of a predator, the one that is parasitic in nature. And of course, we're given a use. The PCs discover an abandoned craft carrying something in the cargo bay. That something is a spine tingler far larger than normal, but luckily, it seems frozen in some kind of amber. Hey, there you go, Jim Walls. Maybe you could use that in your sci-fi cipher game you're running. Of course, all your players probably listen to this, so maybe not. Spine tinglers who have slain their host are nearly as large as a person, but lack of food shrinks them back down after a few days. So I'm seeing a lot of similarities here with the blood feast tick that I talked about way back when, but a very different too. And we're given a GM intrusion. The spine tingler jumps for the character's face. On a failed speed defense roll, the creature completely covers the character's head and begins to feed. The PC is blinded and deafened and begins to smother. If the victim or an ally fails a might-based task to pull the spine tingler free, she falls unconscious while the creature remains attached. Not attempting to pull the creature off counts as a failure. Okay, so there's the spine tingler. So I have two challenges for myself in this segment. The first challenge is I try to see how to use whatever the creature is as the, you know, the less obvious antagonist or protagonist. So this is obviously an antagonist. How to use this as a protagonist? I suppose maybe you could weaponize this. So if you have someone you want to get rid of and for some reason you don't want to do it a quick and easy way and you want to, you know, have them endure some horror first, you could figure out a way to infect them with a spine tingler, wait till they're past the point of no return, and then lead them to a couple mirrors where they can see the thing on their back and be truly horrified by it. That'd be fun. I guess that's one way you could use it as a protagonist. It doesn't seem you can communicate with these things. So other than intentionally weaponizing it and infecting someone with it, or maybe training it, sick 'em, spine tingler. But we're not really told the shrewdness of a predator. So it seems like they're intelligent enough maybe to be trained, but a lot of predators can't be trained because they're predators. So yeah. Using this as a protagonist, I think is pretty challenging. And then my other challenge for myself is how can we use this creature in another game? So usually in the past, I've talked about Numenera creatures and try to think of ways to use them in the Strange. So this Strange creature, I think you could easily use this in Numenera. This falls right in line with a lot of Numenera creatures. This would not be out of place in the Ninth World. This would be something fun to find in some hermetically sealed something that the PCs find. Maybe they find a facility in orbit or underground or on the surface. It's hermetically sealed and no one's been in there for millennia. And maybe one of these guys is in there. I guess they'd have to be in suspended animation, or maybe they can hibernate. It doesn't really say. It doesn't say they can't. You could say that maybe they can hibernate for centuries if there's no food. Or maybe everything in the place is in stasis, and when the PCs enter, the stasis is lifted. You could come up with something. But yeah, you could definitely use this in Numenera. I think even in The Strange, you could probably get away with using it in recursions other than Mad Science. I don't see why this couldn't work in a magic recursion. I think it'd work really well. And maybe even a mundane recursion like Earth. I mean, we're already swallowing the existence of the Strange itself and translating. I don't think this creature existing would stretch credibility any more than that. And yeah, so you could use this anywhere. Although maybe not in Shotguns and Sorcery. I have no idea. I know nothing about that IP. Never heard of it, but I don't know if it would fit thematically. Definitely in any kind of horror themed thing you were doing. So if you were using like in Strange Eons in Numenera, or maybe you're doing a horror recursion in The Strange, or maybe you're listening to this in the future and you've got your hands on the handy dandy Cypher System rulebook and you've come up with your own horror setting and game, this would be a great creature to use in that.
Strange Encounters.
Scott Robinson has another Strange Encounters for us today. And today he's talking about a system from another game that you can maybe use in your Cypher System game. And this is just another tool to add to your toolbox for your Cypher System games.
Hello, this is Agent Neil with the next in the series of Strange Encounters segments. Today I'd like to introduce you to a new mechanic in the forthcoming Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. One of the things I like about the Cypher system is that it moves away from dichotomous resolution of roles. In many RPG systems, you either succeed or fail in a roll. If you roll under some number, you failed completely. If you roll over some target number, be it armor class or difficulty class, you have succeeded. With the Cypher system, there are a variety of outcomes that can happen with any given roll. You can have a 1 and trigger a GM intrusion. You could fail by rolling below the target difficulty number. You could succeed by rolling above it. And then depending upon whether you're in combat or other forms of encounters, you may have minor or major effects. You may deal extra damage. And you could even trade out damage for different effects within combat. This leads to a great deal more variety in the fundamental dice rolling mechanic of the Cypher System RPG. If you also like this approach, but really want to ratchet up the stakes for these sorts of rolls, I recommend you consider a mechanic from the forthcoming edition, the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game, referred to as push rolls. In that game system, if you fail a roll, you can attempt the roll again with higher stakes. If you fail the second roll, you fail dramatically, usually leading to something on the order of a really bad GM intrusion. You could adopt the same sort of system for any Cypher System game. You could allow players to re-roll a roll, but instead of having a GM intrusion only on a 1, any failure to succeed on the second pushed roll could result in a GM intrusion. Of course, you'll have to figure out how to adapt this with XP-based rerolls in your own game. You could make this simply how you manage rerolls based on XP, thereby raising the stakes of any reroll. Or you could give this as a once-per-session option for players without having them expend XP. But this is an option available to you, borrowed from this other game system, that allows you to increase the stakes for one dramatic roll. In my experience, these are the sorts of moments that players remember. They remember the time that everything came down to a die roll, and you accept very high stakes for that next roll. I recommend you play with this and see if you'd like to incorporate it into your own games, be they The Strange or Numenera. Well, thank you for listening to this segment of Strange Encounters. You can find me on Twitter at Agent Neil, that is at @agent_NIEHL, or you can find me on the various Google Plus Cypher and Strange communities, posting under my civilian identity of Scott Robinson. Be seeing you.
All right, time to wrap up this episode of GM Intrusions. If you would like to reach me by email, you can do so at lexstarwalker@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at lexstarwalker. Please call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1. Please visit our website starwalkerstudios.com/GM Intrusions. And there you can find a link to the Google Plus community page. The GM Intrusions Google Plus community is a great place to meet other players of the Cypher System games and even find people to play with online or in your area, wherever you're at. It's also a great place to ask questions about the rules or ask for ideas. And it's also a great place to get inspirations. We have quite a few members who post really cool pieces of art that they find online that can be great inspirations for Numenera or Strange games. If you'd like to support the show, a great way to do so, in addition or instead of becoming a patron, is you can sign up for a free trial of Audible Books, courtesy of GM Intrusions. And you can find out more about that at audibletrial.com/GM Intrusions. And I like to recommend Gene Wolfe's The Shadow of the Torturer for you. That is available on Audible and is a great read. But you can find lots of other books there too.
This week's GM Intrusion.
Jim Hoffman sent me a great submission for this week's GM Intrusion, which he calls a negative probability field. Entering this field causes an intrusion to happen every X rounds. The MacGuffin is at the center of the field, an artifact, special location, or whatever. The field could have a radius of a kilometer or more. The intrusions increase in frequency and severity toward the center, with the most severe effects being things like moving down the damage track. So it becomes a push-your-luck exercise. When do the players switch from taking intrusions and getting experience to spending experience to avoid the intrusions? And hopefully they realize that once they're at the center, they still have to get out again. So thank you, Jim, for that intrusion. That is just sheer genius. And you could build a whole session off of that idea. That is awesome. I think that would be a lot of fun to play with. So I want to thank all of you for tuning in to episode 65 and joining me for the beginning of the second season of GM Intrusions. And I want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for your support. I really appreciate it. Once again, I am Lex Starwalker, and this has been a GM Intrusion.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. This episode's music provided by Stanko, Renfield, Cloudwalker, Transboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/GM Intrusions. GM Intrusions is made possible thanks to the support of listeners like you. Learn how you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/GM Intrusions.
I'm awesome!